Pierre and Tomohiro and Ivan for this fantastic period that I spent here in spite of my computer problems. Also, I should thank Herbert and Jeremy. Okay, so let me, so I'm going to talk on work which grew out of these papers here. There are papers in collaboration with Mark Adler, Sunil Shita, and Gert Johansson. Sunil Shita is a postdoc at Bonn for the moment, and he's a very good young person, and he's looking for a job right now. So let me say something about what has been happening in random matrix theory. We know there's a sign process, that's the bulk of random matrices. We have the Airy process. Airy process is a process which at every given time is a Tracy-Williams distribution. We have on top of that, and that describes when you have large systems that describe the Airy process, describes the statistical behavior along the boundary, now the time being essentially tangential to that boundary. Then we have the Piercy process, which is a process which appears in the context of cusps like this. And also on this side, on the finite side, we have the GUE and we have the GUE minor process. The GUE minor process is a process which describes the eigenvalues of the matrix and all its minors. I mean, a GUE matrix and all its consecutive minors, okay? Now, what's in fact, what's, I would say, above all that? Above all that, we have a so-called technal process, which appears in the context. I mean, take, for instance, take, for instance, Brownian motions, which start at two points here, which are forced to go back to, say, two other points here. This is a time scale, this is x. I mean, then, in fact, you will have non-intersecting Dyson Brownian modes. You will have things like that. And now you can tune things in such a way that they just momentarily touch here. And there you have a sort of new statistics appearing, which is called the, again, technical process, because it's a, you can say it's a technical distribution. I mean, this corresponds to the simplest singularity which we know, which is a tack load, I mean, just tangential. So here we have a new statistic. There's a process going with it, which is the techno process. On this side, we have, I mentioned the GUE minor process, and above that, you have a techno GUE minor process. That is to say, and that's in fact what I'm going to try to explain today. I'm going to explain that with, in fact, combinatorial models. And then I will indicate to you what we know about the connection with random matrices. Okay, so I'm going to consider two overlapping ASTIC diamonds, and I like to understand what the statistics is or the fluctuations in along the on the intersection of these two ASTIC diamonds. That's really what I want to explain. So what an ASTEC diamond is, an old subject going back to Castellane and so on. To the left, or is there a pointer here? So that's an ASTEC diamond. It's like a checkerboard, and here you put dominoes in such a way. There are four types. You see me from that picture. There are four types of dominoes. You have them when it's dark on the. I mean, imagine glass dominoes. You can see through. It's dark below. It's dark on the right, or it can be dark on the left. Or it can be dark on top, like here. Okay. Again, I mean that has been discussed quite extensively. Now let me overlap those two plastic diamonds. So I have one here, and I have another one here. I call the overlap, I will always call row. In this case, it's three, because there are three rows of dark squares in that intersection. Okay. Then, so I'm going to cover these two diamonds with dominoes. And what I wish to do is to understand the fluctuations of this domino covering along this overlap. Okay? Because I will do it in general, but then we will rescaling in such a way that we see very clearly what happens in that overlap. Also, let me say that later I will let the size of these dominoes go to infinity, become very, very, very large, and yet keep the size of the overlap constant, equal to 3, say. Okay? So it becomes huge dominoes which have something very small in common. And in fact, it turns out that there's some new statistics appearing there, which in fact it wasn't known before. These are the standard things about domino coverings. You put a weight on the vertical dominoes, A, which is between 0 and 1, put a weight 1 on horizontal dominoes, and you define the probability of a domino tiling in this way. Okay? So the A between 0 and 1 corresponds to the vertical dominoes. Then I'm also going to put a height function on that. That is to say that the dominoes which look like this will be flat. The dominoes which look like this, they will have, if this is 0, 0, 0, this will be 1, 1, 1. And then if a domino looks like this, this will, if this is 0, 0, and 0, I will give the height 1 to these 3 points, and sort of the dual for these guys here. And I will put in this case, I will put a dot. On those dominoes, I'll put a dot here and a dot here, okay? So what we will compute is the probability that there is a dot on a given black square, which is equivalent to the statement that the domino which sits there will be south or east. That is to say that it will be pointing down and it will be pointing to the right. So that's in fact the probability that we will be interested in and that we have to compute. So given those heights, we will, this is the same covering that we had before. I do a domino covering here, and it leads to a random surface. That's to say, given those heights that I repeated here, you know, this starts at 0, 0, 1, 1, etc., goes all the way to 2n, where n, again, is the size of the domino. And I draw the level lines, the corresponding level lines. So this is a level line corresponding to 1/2. This is a level line corresponding to 3/2, 5/2, 7/2, etc., all the way down here. Okay. So there are A. This is domino A. This is domino B. So it remembers that you have those two dominoes, and I will call these the A level line because they correspond to this domino here, and then we have the B level lines which correspond to this domino here. I mean, it's a little combinatorics to see that it runs like that. It always with those heights. I mean, this goes up. In a linear fashion, it's flat here, it goes up here, and etc. Okay, so that's simple combinatorics. And now I'm going to.
Is the boundary condition always fixed by something?
I beg your pardon?
Are the boundary conditions always fixed by something?
Yes. The boundary conditions they are given automatically by means of those heights and those dominoes. Yes, that's a fact. I mean, it's a little.
It's just a domain which is fixed.
Sorry, Dan?
It's just a domain which is fixed, right? I mean.
Yeah, the domain is fixed.
And then from there, everything.
But then at the boundary, it's a simple little exercise. Take this one up here. If this is 0, this has to be 1, okay, etc. Okay. I remember it's Herbert many years ago told me to look at. To look at height functions for this. I mean, I think it was an SRI many years ago. So you get in this way, you get a random surface. And so I'm going to intersect this random surface with planes which lead to those level lines. Okay. And then I'm going to the next thing, because you see, I mean, we have these dots. We have this domino covering us, we have those dots. So we have to make sense of that. The way to make sense of that now is to intersect this figure with lines running to those black squares, okay, like this. And that's, in fact, the next picture, except that it gets a bit more confusing. So I know I still have my level lines, I know the heights here, and I intersect with lines like this, with those transversal lines, always going through the black squares. Okay? And I put a dot, each time I intersect a path, a level line, I will put a dot. Okay? And I will put a blue dot, or it's a black dot, maybe it's a blue dot, when I intersect a level line corresponding to this domino, and I put a red dot when I intersect a level line corresponding to this domino. Okay? There's really no clear distinction. Well, there is a clear distinction, but it doesn't really matter, but that will come up. And so the L process, there's not a certain process which we will show will be determinantal. There's an L process going with this, just to say that, say you start here, you have dots on along that line, then on the next you have dots along that line, you have dots on that line, etc. What you see in its counting argument, that it goes down. Here it's there are n minus 1 dots, I believe, and then it goes to n minus 2, n minus 3, and then at some point near the overlap it stabilizes. It stabilizes the same number of dots, and then it starts growing again. Okay, so it's not a particularly, I mean, from if you want to compute, say, the kernel for such a process is not particularly pleasant because the numbers change so drastically. Okay, so but you get around it, and in fact, let me. This is a simulation which Sunil made. I mean, you take so n equal to 50. These are the level lines. Okay, these are the level lines corresponding to the A diamond, and this level corresponds to the B diamond. And this these are the different types, the different colors. Okay, so I keep my dot. I mean, here I didn't put dots, but at some in a moment I will show you a picture with dots. Okay. So again, what we like to do is understand the statistical fluctuations about here. Okay. Can we express them in some kind of way? What happens, for instance, when n becomes very, very large, and I go to 100 and 200, and still the overlap here, the overlap is very small, it's 3. Okay. The A, remember, A was the weight going with vertical dominoes, that's close to 1. Doesn't have to, you could have taken something else. Yes, and now on this, I repeat the same picture here. I have the level lines here, but put a level lines here. I have the domino covering here, and here Sunil made a picture of the corresponding dots. Okay, these are the corresponding dots. Okay. So remember that you see the lines that we the process that we are interested in is a process of the lines which are going like this. Okay, and each time you hit such a domino, you put a dot. Okay. So, and here these are the dots corresponding to, so these are these different lines. I drew a few of them. But in my, what I did then, I magnified, I looked at a microscope at this picture here, and tried to see what happens. And I think that is useful to do that. So, I remember I said I looked at a microscope, and what I find, remember the number of overlaps was 3. So I have 4 lines here, which have exactly 4 dots. 1, 2, I'm sorry, I have 5 lines where I have exactly 4 dots. Okay, so you count, you have a red dot here, a red dot 2, 3, and 4. There's 4 red dots. Here you have 1, 2, 3 red dots and 1 blue dot. Then the next line, you will have 2 red dots and 2 blue dots, etc. Okay, and then beyond that, here it goes up. I mean, if I would draw the next line, you would see it would be 5 and 6 and 7, etc. So I mean, this is, say, for instance, at this level, you have 10 dots. Okay, you have 10 dots there. Okay. And so what we like to understand is what the statistics is of of these dots near that overlap. The row was 3, and so you have, no, the, sorry, the row was 4, and so you have 5 lines, row plus 1 lines, which have exactly row dots. So, I mean, so let me give you the kernel. I'm not going to explain, it's a long story. I'm just going to give you what the kernel is for that situation, okay? I mean, it's the kernel, again, as you said, the kernel for the determinant process going with the dots which live on those transversal lines here. It's given by the one Aztec kernel. So that means as if there was only one Aztec diamond, okay? It's given by, that's the first part. In some appropriate variables, I don't want to go into the details, but in some appropriate, so this is really, here there's no double Aztec, it's a one Aztec. But then there's a perturbation, so to speak. And that perturbation is in fact an inner product. It's an inner product of two functions. Again, I don't want to give you what the functions are. There are two functions which are somewhat complicated. This is a resolvent of another kernel. So I mean, it's given, and that runs, so the sum of the product of the k's, where k is bigger than n minus rho plus 1, n being the size of the diamond, rho being the overlap. Okay. So that's, roughly speaking, what the result is. So I don't want to go into the
yeah, I mean, the one Aztec is n by n, or is it, what is the size of one Aztec? I mean, it's n by n?
N by n, that's right. So this
just is just that one, okay.
That's the n. So we have two parameters in the game here. That's the size of the diamond and the overlap, okay? Like before, I mean, that picture, the overlap was 4.
And Kn is the kernel of the one.
Sorry.
K1 Aztec, the kernel of that is Kn?
This is a kernel going with the one Aztec diamond. That kernel had been computed by Johansson and Nordenstam. I don't want to give you what the kernel is. I mean, it's somewhat complicated, but I just want to say that the L kernel is really a perturbation of the kernel for one diamond, as if there was just one diamond. Forget about the two diamonds. That's just in some appropriate variables, again, which I don't want to give you, minus this perturbation. So overlapping those two diamonds has the effect of adding this kind of perturbation. Okay.
If you go to the point process, you know, in the vicinity of this overlap.
Yes.
Is there some result that says that basically what you're seeing is a uniform distribution on these sort of interlacing arrays that come together?
Right. Yes. Yes. No. Right. But we'll get to we'll get to that. Yes. 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 That's right. but there's something that you have to notice, and I think it was very visible in that picture here, is that there's some. I mean, the blue dots, I mean, they sort of live here. They correspond to the A diamond. The red dots correspond to the B diamond. You see that there's an ordering here. I mean, the blue dot does not mix with the red dots. I mean, it's always above it. I mean, here you have two red dots and two blue dots. It's not that they start mixing up, okay? So there's some pressure. There's some pressure on the red dots on these blue dots. That means there's something which keeps them down, and vice versa. I mean, the red dots or the blue dots are pushed up from these red dots. Okay, so it's something which will come back anymore. So now I take the Etch-Tacknell kernel, which is scaling limit of this L kernel, which I didn't write down in detail. So you keep row fixed, you keep the row, the overlap fixed, but n becomes very, very, very large. Okay. So, I mean, then you find the following, is that, so I just say, the size n goes to infinity, the rho is a fixed over level of two diamonds. Now, there's something important to understand here is that the A was the weight of the vertical guys. I mean, the A was the weight of the vertical, one was the weight of the horizontal guys. So this, you rescale this at 1 minus beta over the square root of n. So that means that when n becomes very large, you have to let the horizontal and the vertical dominoes have to have the same weight. And, but I'll explain to you why. I mean, there's some geometrical reason why that needs to be the case. And then you rescale the Kronecker C eta. I mean, I should have. Well, anyway, I mean, you rescale. So that's the formula. You had this L H. I'm sorry. You had this L kernel. You take this limit. And that leads to this edge tack node kernel here. Edge tack node kernel, which I will give you in the next slide. So the edge tack node kernel is, in fact, it's equal to the edge kernel. And I will explain to you what the edge kernel is. The edge kernel is, if you take one diamond, maybe I should move a little bit. Can I raise this?
There is some light on
me. Yes.
On the other side.
No. So if you have this Aztec diamond here, I mean you know that asymptotically, I mean, when n gets very large, you will get an inscribed ellipse here. We got an inscribed ellipse or a circle. It depends on a. If a is one, it will be a circle. If a is not one, smaller than one, it will be an ellipse. And in fact, the edge kernel is the statistics, the fluctuation near this turning point here, okay, near this tangency point, okay? I mean, the fluctuation along here, they correspond to the airy process, but here's the different statistics. So that means to say that what we find is that the edge, I mean, in that strip, we find that the kernel is equal to the statistics for this problem, plus a perturbation here, which in fact turns out to be a finite sum. If you analyze this carefully, you will see this in fact is a finite sum. So in fact, I gave you the edge statistic, I mean the edge kernel here, it's the following thing. Now, I put this picture here intentionally because I wanted to show why a must go to 1. See, if this gets very large, if this gets very large, I mean, you want to have something like this, and you have another circle here. You see, if this would be an ellipse, I mean, this is now the case where A is quite small, I mean, it would be, say, between 0 and 1. I mean, then the tangency of, see, that this is exactly the place where you have this tack node process, which I did not discuss. But the thing is, you want that strip to be very small compared to the size of that Aztec diamond. So that's why you need to have those two ellipses have to go to two circles so that they just barely overlap. And that's in fact the region where this edge tacking process takes place. Anyway, this is the kernel. And then in fact it looks like a rather formidable expression, but actually you can compute with it. You can compute with it, and for instance, you like to know what would be the statistics of the particles say, if I go back to 1 second, what would be the statistics of the particles, say, here? I take one line, and I'm interested in the statistics of those dots here, okay? And you can compute that. It is actually the following. For 1 second, I'm skipping something, which I will come back to, but it's given by the following distribution. It looks like GUI. This is a usual Van der Mond determinant. This, in fact, is a Van der Mond determinant consisting of two pieces. It's Van der Mond for the first part, where the delta is a distance to the overlap, and this, you have another part here, which is in fact exactly has a size of the overlap, and those phi k are truncated case moments. Okay. So I mean, it is like GUE, except that this Van der Monde is slightly different. Okay, it's a distribution. I don't know whether anyone has seen it in the literature. I don't know, but. Now, I also mentioned, I also asked a question before, is there a matrix model going with that? Okay. In fact, there is a matrix model going with that. Namely, I'm saying that the statistics, now my claim is the statistics of the dot particle in the rescaled double elastic diamond when its size goes to infinity, and the thing which I just discussed at great length, that's equivalent to the statistics of the eigenvalues of coupled GUE matrices A and B, where the coupling is very peculiar. Namely, the coupling is such that the spectrum of the 1-by-1 minor of that matrix lies to the left of the spectrum of the row-by-row matrix of the other one, of the row-by-row minor of the other one. And the spectrum of the 2-by-2 smallest minor of A lies to the left of the spectrum of the row minus one's minor of the matrix B, okay, etc. Okay, it's a finite number of conditions. Now, if you compute the joint probability of the eigenvalues of A and B, you will find exactly the same statistics as in this double as in this model here. Okay. So that's so that means that there is in fact an analog, there's a random matrix analog of that problem.
It's a finite n identity, or is it asymptotic identity?
Well, this is the case. This is. This corresponds to letting the size of the diamond go to infinity. But you take a matrix of size n,
yes,
any size, capital N, and what I claim is that you look at the eigenvalues of the minors of the joint probability of the minors of A and B, and you put in these conditions. That's the conditioning. You put in those conditions, I mean, then you find exactly the same kind of statistics. And of course, it's not when you look at a picture, it's not totally surprising, because that's exactly what we had. This corresponds to the red dots. The red dots were on that line to the left of the blue dots, et cetera, et cetera. If you were on the first line, you had one dot, which was smaller than rho minus one dots of the other one, et cetera. And then you had two dots, which are smaller than the spectrum of the blue dot of the other one, etc., etc. Okay. So now I'd like to discuss another model which we looked at and which we have, which we believe to have the same kind of behavior. And this concerns hexagons, Lozenstein's of hexagons. Of course, that's an old subject. Remember what these hexagons, you imagine this room, and you put in the corners, you put blocks, you fill the room with blocks in such a way that it's increasing. You look from here, okay? Then you get such a picture, and after that goes back to MacMahon gave us a formula for the number of such tilings, okay? And then there has been lots of work on that by combinatorial people. Yes, there have been a lot of work on that by combinatorial people, Cohn, Kenyon, Prop, and Vess, and also Johansson and Nordenstam have looked at that. Then Leonid Petrov looked at non-convex figures also. And now, but we were interested in trying to see whether in that, for such a situation, you could create one of these edge tack node phenomena. Okay. So let me consider not a room consisting of a floor and two perpendicular walls, but let me look at something a bit more complicated. So it's a little exercise in 3D vision. You have, this is flat. This is the wall, this is the back wall, the blue back wall. Then you have a step up here. I mean, in this case, it's two units. You have a step up. Then you have a little flat piece. Then I put a wall here. And then I put again a blue wall and a red wall here. So I like to cover this room, I mean, this chamber, with 1 times 1 times 1 blocks, in such a way that you do not exceed the height, that you do not exceed this height. Okay? So it seems like a rather complex thing, but nevertheless one can get results. And then I also like to discuss the asymptotics of this. So I'm going to cover this with these blocks, and an example of this is in the next slide, and we get something like that. Okay? So I have blocks. Remember, that was that wall, that blue wall, so it got covered up. The green is always flat. That corresponds to that. Let's see. Yeah, the step that corresponds to that step here of one, and then I have covered it with this. And that's an example. Okay, that's an example of such a thing. So the point is, this is my empty chamber, and this is the chamber which is filled up with those blocks. So I now I put in the middle of each red tile, I put a red dot, and I call that the K process. And then there's another process to put a blue circle in the middle of each blue tile. So here I have a blue tile, I put a circle there, I have a red tile oriented like that, I put a red dot here, and I have the flat thing, I don't put anything there. Okay. So you have two different processes. And what we will be interested in is what happens, in fact, for the blue tiles in the neighborhood of this complicated step. Okay. Now let me remove all the unnecessary things, and so I get the following figure. I just get those two dents here. Okay, so this is the same figure before, but I removed all the tiles. I have my red dots here. This is a wall which is given. I mean, you can't do anything with it. It's given. This is given, and one thing which you notice is that if you start with this level, you have two red dots here. At the next level, you have three red dots. The next level, you have four red dots. Here you have five red dots, etc. And then artificially, you may, without loss of geometry, you may put dots here. So the numbers go up gradually. Okay. There's also another feature, is that when you go up, those dots, they, in fact, they interlace. That's to say, these two interlace those three interlace those four interlace those five, etc. Okay, but that's another feature. So the question is, what are the statistical fluctuations of the blue circles in the strip? Again, that strip with that step of which row between the two cuts. I mean, you have, I call these guys here, those dents here, call them cuts. I mean, this is added artificially, but this part is certainly important. That means this is rigid. You cannot cover them with anything. I mean, there have to be red dots here. Okay, that's rigid. And then what happens when the size of these eggs, I mean, I also like to think of them as being two, so overlapping hexagons. Of course, this is not quite true, because this would only be true if that line here would be sitting on that line there. Okay, so they're so to speak two hexagons, not quite, but you can think of it as two overlapping hexagons. So we like to know what happens when the size becomes very large. Okay, that means to say when all these, let me go back here, when this becomes large and this becomes very large, when D becomes very large, but I still want that the distance between those two cuts, I like to have that constant line. In this case, I mean, the distance is two. It's two units, and so I like that to be finite and fixed. So, as I mentioned to you, those red dots are interlacing. They are interlacing, but they lead. I mean, this is in fact the coordinates, the coordinates of the bottom. Let's go back to the picture here. I mean, these are two red dots here. But in general, this is the size of this I call D, so you will have D coordinates, and that's rigid. On top here, this is also rigid. You have two red dots here, and those dots, you will take them all together. And that is also rigid. So you have, so to speak, this interlacing pattern, where this is given, these are definite coordinates, and this is given. I gave the coordinates here of it, I could give it there. So this is a truncated Gelfand-Zetlin cone. Now one can construct from that, from such a pattern, that is something which is in a way rather standard, one can construct in fact a semi-standard skewed Young tableau. In the following matter, I have the coordinates. I mean, this is, the L is the level. Level 0 is below. L equal to 1 is the line above. L equal to 2 is the line above, etc. So I take XIL plus I, okay, with prescribed initial and final conditions. Okay, that's what I said. I mean, the bottom is fixed and the top is fixed. And then you can construct from the figure which I had before, you can construct, in fact, a sequence of skewed Young tableaus. I mean, the first one is the bottom, where there was this cut. That corresponds to, if you compute the coordinates, and you do each time, you know, the first coordinate plus 1, the second coordinate plus 2, you would find a rectangular figure like this. At the next level, you compute, there are three particles, remember, so I should have, now this is x11 plus 1, x12 plus 2, x13 plus 3. And in fact, you are at the first level, this is zero level, this is first level, you put 1. And then at the next level, you put 2s, etc. So you construct this way skewing tableaus, which are in fact embedded in each other. But this always remains. This is fixed. You can't do anything with it. You cannot fill it with anything. So in the end, you find the following figure, the following skewing tableau, which you fill up with those numbers. In general, there's a one-to-one correspondence between this figure, which I've showed you many times already, and such a skew Young tableau of shape lambda minus mu. I mean, this corresponds to this is M1. I mean, this locates the dense between all the figures, M1. M2 dislocates with regard to that side. Okay. Then you have N1. N1 is this length. N2 is that length here. Okay. And then the C is that height here, and the B is C. And the D is exactly the size of the dent. So that means that filling this lambda minus mu, I mean, that's this Q Young diagram with numbers from 1 up to capital N, is equivalent to this somewhat complicated picture. Okay. So that means that it ends up with the geometry of these skew, understanding the geometry of these skew Young tableaus. Okay, so the fact that this is a skew Young tableau implies that you can cut up this big skew Young diagram in horizontal strips. In horizontal strip in combinatorics, it's a Young diagram which contains at most one box in each row. Okay. So now I need to give you some formulas. I mean the S. I mean the symmetric function S lambda minus mu of 1 is exactly equal to the number of skew Young tableaus. Lambda of size lambda minus mu. Okay. It's also equal to the number from what I said before. It's equal to the number of red dot configurations. Of course, MacMahon he computed that for the case when there were no dents. Okay. So this, in fact, extends that formula of MacMahon. Now you also have in combinatorics. You also have that S lambda minus mu of x1 xn in general is a sum of these products here. So where you take, you slice your Young tableau, you slice your Young tableau in horizontal strips, and it's a sum of the product of xi and this. And that enables you to write down a formula. And now I will switch to the Q world. Okay. So far Q was 1. I mean, that enables you to, if you put xi due to q to the I to the minus n in that formula, you find that s lambda minus mu of q1 minus n is precise. Powers here is equal to that sum, very easy to see, it's equal to that sum here. And this can be interpreted as the volume of your skew Young diagram, where you put n minus 1 block on top of that strip, the first strip, n minus 2 blocks on top of n2 minus n1, that strip, it's a 0 block on top of the n. And this volume is very much related to this volume, not quite, I mean, some sort of complement of that. I mean, the two volumes are highly related. So this now gives us a probability distribution. A Q probability distribution on that system, namely that the probability of those strips mu zero, mu one, mu n, you have this interlacing here in such a way that they are horizontal strips that is equal to the following ratio, which can then be written as a product of determinants. Of functions. It will be a product of capital N plus 2 determinants. Remember, capital N is the height of your figure. It's the height of your figure, so it's a product of N plus 2 determinants. And of course, that is exactly something of the like the Carley-McGregor formula. And then you can hope from that to be able to compute the kernel for that problem. So here, it's a determinant of n plus 2. I mean, the bulk is n, the product of n determinants. This is the beginning, this is the end. I just gave you the formula for the chi I z, that's very simple. Those phi k of z are given by those integrals here. But then there's, one has to be careful because you have to add virtual points because the number is increasing, etc. But that's technical. Let me not go into that. So then you find by generalizing this Einar Meta Borlin method, you find a Q kernel, which I don't know, again, it's a quite a formidable expression. It's a Q kernel, which is such that you can now say the probability in Q world, that is a red dot at location X on level M, and a red dot at location Y on level M, is given by that determinant. So there's a kernel MX and Y here for which you can compute it. But again, I do not wish to give that formula. But what we really need is what happens when Q goes to 1. Okay, and I mean that is a rather intricate affair. I mean, there's a lot of transformations involved. But one is more clear. You find a fun expression. It is the limit of that kernel is even equal to a Heaviside part plus a double integral. A double integral which involves lots of factorials. These are ascending factorials. And lots of polynomials. The polynomials which are very, which really reflect the geometry of the problem. Okay. And then actually, to make it even more complicated, there's a ratio of R-fold integrals. I'll tell you in a moment, R is R-fold integrals of, integrals a set of polynomials, this being the Van der Waals determinant with regard to R. Now, what is R? R is, so now we have to look at the figure again. R, in fact, turns out to be the number of particles on that line here. The number of blue particles on that line here. I'm sorry, it's the number of... yeah, that's right. So the R turns out to be the number of particles on the parallel lines here. And in that strip, now again, if you look at those red particles, in the first oblique line, there's one on them. And then it goes up. Then it goes down again, and then it stabilizes in that strip, and it goes up again and down again. Okay, so it's a rather complicated pattern. And the R is a number of blue particles which you'll find in the strip between those two cuts. I mean, the dotted lines here, and you look at the number that you'll find on these. Here you have, this is a case effect where R is 1, and that turns out to be equal to B, this is B, that means minus the size of the cut. Okay? So let's go back to the integral here. I have to say something about these polynomials. They're all kind of monic polynomials, QR, QC, etc. Again, those polynomials are highly related to the geometry of the problem. The QR will be the monic polynomial whose zeros are exactly those points here. The QL will be polynomials, monic polynomials whose zeros are exactly those points here. Then there's a QC that will be the polynomial, monic polynomial whose zero is exactly those two points, etc. So there's a Q rho, which is the monic polynomial having exactly those two roots, etc. And Q sigma. So it's extremely the kernel reflects exactly the geometry of the problem. Now, of course, if you look at this carefully, this is in fact it's an integral. There are R plus 2 integrals and R plus 2 nested integrals. This is R integrals, which correspond to the number of particles, and then you have another two integrations there. So what we like to do, so that's the first step. We let Q go to 1. Okay, let Q go to 1, so you find the following kernels. But then that's not enough. Because that was the K problem. The K problem had to do decay process had to do with the red dots, I mean, on these lines here. But what I'm really interested in is the determinant process corresponding to those oblique lines, which contain the blue dots. The blue dots are generated by the intersections of those lines here with those oblique lines here. Okay. So, you know, to do that, you have to do some other tricks. I mean, you have to use you have to compute the Castellani matrix for that problem. And you have to compute the inverse Castellani matrix. But fortunately, the K kernel is very closely related to the inverse Castellani matrix. And then you use a theorem by Kenyon, which enables you to say that those blue dots and those oblique lines, they are in fact a determinant point process for which you can write down the the Castellani problem is defined on a honeycomb lattice, because this covering here by those tilings, by those losanges, is equivalent to diamonds on this honeycomb lattice. So you can actually compute everything. The Castellani matrix is the adjacency matrix of that problem. And so you can, then in the end, the kernel for the blue dots here, along those lines, is given by the kernel for the red dots, but with some change of variables. It's not quite a change of variable because it's -1 here, -1 here, it's +1 and -1, there's some shifting going on, but they are highly related. And now we now like to do scaling. Now we let everything go to infinity in a certain different way. This whole picture goes to infinity. The only thing that we keep fixed is the width of that strip. That means the distance between those two cuts on the one hand. And we also like to figure the number of particles in the strip. And that then leads to, I don't want to go into the details of that scaling limit, but that gives you then the following kernel. So it's a kernel which is given by Heaviside function plus the double integral here. This is a line, this is an imaginary line which is to the right of zero. This is a circle about zero, this is a slightly bigger circle about zero. And then you have a ratio of two functions here, theta r. And then you have another part, which is again a double integral and a ratio of something called theta half and minus one over theta. And those theta r, they are those creatures here. Okay, so it's not very complicated because there are many, many integrals involved. And I must say, it took a long time to get it right. I mean, for a long time, things are always a little wrong. So, but I think if now we check many cases, I mean, you know, if you check densities, you try to see the densities are positive indeed. And so that's. And of course, to finish, I mean, what we hope that this kernel generalizes the previous problem. I mean, about the Aztec diamond, that's one thing. When I say generalized, we believe that for r equal to rho, that means that the width of the strip, that equal to the number of particles, that kernel should be the same as in the previous problem, that we hope. That certainly, because the two kernels, they look very, very different. They don't seem to have any relation, just visually. And then it would be nice to find the density on the lines, on those oblique lines, for those dots, and what are the densities. And then, of course, the interesting question is also, is there a corresponding random matrix problem? And let me finish here. Thank you very much.
Questions?
Yes.
One question on this two matrix model, I mean, which sort of appeared in the middle of your talk.
Yes.
So I just wonder how it sort of, I mean, usually when you have a two matrix model, I mean, let's say independent, then you would write the density as e to, let's say A and B are the two matrices,
yes.
Right, e to the trace, right. A squared times e to the minus k is p squared. I mean, it would just independent copies of the GUE matrices. And then typically what people would do is, you know, if you want to write down in some interaction, you write e to the trace of some function, let's say something like a minus b squared or, you know, something
some interaction.
That's right. And so my question is now, of course, you condition, so it's somehow a limiting case. Can you sort of write it in a more standard way and then
I mean, you condition the matrices on the small minors.
Yes.
So, I mean, you're looking at two people, but you're looking at their feet, I mean, somehow.
There's no simple formula, sort of. Are you really
No. That? Well, you can write some, but it will be artificial.
It will be unnatural.
It will be totally artificial. That's right. No, there's no, it would be nice to be, now you are thinking of a formula in the classical coupled GUE trace times A times B.
Because it
concerns, in fact, it only relates the small minors, the very small minors. So, yes.
Yes. In the case of the single classic diamond, there is a natural dynamics are shuffling algorithm.
Yes, that's right.
Elastic diamond, and also it is also related to Tasset.
Yes.
And my question is whether you have similar dynamics for the case of elastic diamond. Is there something like that? Yes, because
Sunil used that algorithm in order to compute. Use the algorithm in order to compute those figures. Yes.
What about the connection to something like Tasset? For the case
That I don't know. I mean, that certainly would be interesting to understand. I mean, that's interesting of how things maybe start a bit two species or something like that.
That's the case.
But there are no. I mean, I don't have any simulations for the hexagon case. I mean, so it would be nice to have a simulation for that also. Because see, we don't know, I mean, the limit, we have no idea really how the boundaries look like. For instance, it's certainly something that in the case of... If you take this case and you have two overlapping elastic diamonds, I didn't know and I would never suspected that in fact it's essentially two blobs and two circles. But then you have this this is frozen. This is frozen. It's frozen by one type of it's frozen by it's a very regular pattern, brick-like pattern of red tiles or red dominoes and yellow dominoes. I mean, I would never have suspected this. And there's no proof of that yet. I mean, we don't have any idea. I mean, the same for the hexagon. I mean, I have no idea what the macroscopic pictures of it in the limit. No idea of that.